But when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to LATalkRadio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
This station presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today, we salute you, Mr. Overly Competitive Softball Player.
Mr. Overly Competitive Softball Player.
Some folks play softball for exercise. For others, it's a fun way to enjoy a beautiful day with friends and coworkers. But not you. No way. You play the game for keeps.
10 hours in the batting cage.
Yes, Mr. Overly Competitive Softball Player. You are truly the Ty Cobb of the Division D Co-Ed Citywide Insurance Underwriters League.
Slide in with your spikes up.
You even quit your church-sponsored team.
'Cause God only loves winners, yeah.
So the next time you're on Field 1 and hear a guy on Field 16 screaming at Joan from Human Resources for not hitting the cutoff man, you are hearing the rantings of Mr. Overly Competitive Softball Player, a real American hero.
Mr. Overly Competitive Softball Player.
Nice polyester coaching shorts and knee socks, loser.
Get ready for the best morning show on any kind of radio. Broadcasting live from the palatial studios of LA Talk Radio. Get ready for Sam and Kara in the morning. Give Sam and Kara a call at 323-203-0815. And now, here are your hosts, Sam and Kara.
Good morning and buenos dias to everybody. It's just four.
Bonjour! We're being cultural or Hispanic today or what?
Something like that, but I'm feeling good on a Friday.
Woo! Sam's feeling good on a Friday. What do you got planned,
there
Sam?
There you go. Not much as usual, you know that. And I noticed your hair is a little different today, huh?
Yeah, do you like it?
Straighten it or something?
Yeah, it's more straight. Do you like it?
Yeah, it's cool. It's
do
cool.
you think it looks pretty or not?
Yeah. I mean, even bald-headed, you probably would look good.
Oh,
huh?
You're sweet. See, guys like Sam know how to say the right damn thing. You know what? If you know how to work a woman, I mean, women need to know to not fall into it, but if you know how to work a woman, you can get so much favor with her.
But
you
get further if you're honest, I think, you know. And I
absolutely.
Figure, you know,
when
I've got something good to say, I say it, you know.
Oh, that's sweet. Well, see, even that was good. He like just, you know, really driving home the point that it was an honest answer.
Yeah.
No, you're right. I mean, flattery, if it's done excessively or if it's done not in the right way, it's stupid.
Yeah,
people can see through it.
Yeah, exactly.
But there's a level of really bringing out the good in someone all the time that people love to feel good, and if you can make people feel good, they want to be around you.
Yeah. I feel good.
Da 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 da. Oh, I knew that I would. Ba-dum-ba-dum-ba-dum.
I'm excited about Friday. I need to sleep in a little bit on the weekend. Mm. I'm just
Man,
so fucking tired every
You know, it's
morning,
weird because
you know?
I come in here, I stroll in here, throw it together. Mm-hmm. Some days I look good. And we do our thing, and this is how I see you.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we have a meeting, mm-hmm. like what we've had two since the whole time we've worked together. And
not production meetings either. It's not like we sit here and figure out what the show is.
No, the show's
like.
Doing the show's going on.
The show is on its own.
Show's doing its thing. No, but it's funny because then you do all this other stuff that I never know about. So I'm always like, why are you so damn tired?
Yeah, because I go to sleep late. That's why.
What are you doing? Watching reruns of Lucy? I mean, what?
No, I'm on the computer until 1 o'clock or something.
Now, the more I've been working on, you know, what I've been working on in my comedy and all this stuff and the promoting and blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. I'm on the computer a lot and I just think it's sick.
Yeah.
Do you feel just gross being on the computer for hours and hours?
No, because mostly it's work, you know. I mean, yeah.
No,
I'm saying
even though it's work,
yeah.
I'm not talking like you're surfing the web for fun. I'm talking about like you're doing something, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I mean, the computer's now become people's workstation.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people do.
And people take it everywhere.
Yeah, most
What
people
I don't
do
understand is you have guests sometimes come in here bringing a fucking laptop with them. I mean, what's that all about?
Me?
No, not you. Guests.
Oh, really? Oh, and they put it on while they're on the show?
Yeah.
Maybe they see us with laptops and they want to have one too to fit in, or they want to maybe they're not sure. You think they're doing it to be rude?
No, but I mean, no, I don't think it's to be rude, but I don't think people really think, you know. If I went to a radio station, I would not take a laptop and expect to be able to use it, you know, and for what anyway? You know, but people just go with their laptop everywhere they go, you know, so
yeah.
I agree with you on that.
Yeah, I think that and turning the cell phone off.
Yeah.
Do you agree with the cell phone thing?
I never liked cell phones. I don't like when people take a call while I'm with them or something, you know. It's just not, you know, it's like, who's important to you, the person who's here or the person on the phone?
It bugs me.
Mm-hmm.
Hardcore.
Yeah. I think a lot of people get irritated with
it. It bugs
cell phones,
me because,
you know?
I'm like, you know what, don't do me any favors. Don't pencil me in because, you know, you're going to... Don't get me started on this, Sam. Okay, here we go.
Okay.
I mean, I even have good friends that are just so busy that they are like, hey, so I'm running an errand. Want to know if you want to come with me so we can get some quality hangout time.
Yeah.
Because that's my idea. I mean, not that I mean, I'm not fancy. We can just do whatever. But it's the principle. It's the fact that you're trying to kill three birds with one stone. And, hey, it'd be good to have a buddy to do it with.
Yeah.
You know, I see through it.
But, yeah, I mean, you got to have etiquette, I think, when you use the phone.
How about this, people? Turn your phone off when you're with somebody. And you know what? Be prepared to lose a friendship or not have a close friendship, and be okay with that if you want to have your phone on. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Just be okay with
that. I always have it on vibrate, and if I'm with someone, you know, unless I think it's an emergency, I'm not going to pick up.
That's good.
You know?
Then on the other hand, I've actually, you know, I haven't picked it
You've
up, but
done
I've
it
just
too.
Looked to see if it's important. That's
right,
all.
Yeah. I mean, you can look, it's fine, you know. I mean, you need to check if it's something, if you know it's someone who's urgent, you know.
But don't you think it's very arrogant for people? I've had a friend of mine who's like, you never pick up your phone when I call. I'm like, are we talking right now? Did I call you back?
Mm-hmm.
Be grateful, number one. Number two, it's arrogant for people to think that they have the right to just pick up a device and you should be on the other end when they want you.
Yeah.
I should pick up a device, push a couple buttons, and I should get Sam whenever I want to get Sam.
Yeah.
No one should have that kind of authority in your life except for your spouse or your kids.
I see.
You know?
Yeah.
Even then, that's flexible. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's ridiculous.
Oh,
I'm just supposed to be stop everything I'm doing for you.
Yeah. And what's irritating me, I mean, today you're not even supposed to hold a phone when you're in the car, and yet you see so many people do that, and they drive like shit, you know, because they have to drive with one hand, and they're not concentrating, and it's terrible.
I put mine on speaker, and then I put it in my lap, or I stuff it between my boobs with the
really?
Speaker in popped up towards my mouth.
Mm-hmm.
You like that? The speaker in popped out, tore my mouth.
Yeah. Do you stick it between the boobs? Is that
I do.
You do?
Someone's got to hold it.
Really?
Just smash it in there.
You see, they're useful. They're
very
just looking
useful.
Good.
They're not just aesthetic and decorative. They've got multifunctional purposes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can stuff, when I go running, I stuff books. I stuff everything in there.
Really?
Not really books, but money,
really
keys,
books.
Money and keys. What else?
Really? The keys?
Uh-huh. But
Isn't
usually,
that, like, uncomfortable?
Well, what I do is I clip the keys to my bra strap and then just tuck them underneath one of... Because I wear, like, a few bras when I run.
Right.
Tuck the keys underneath that are dangling underneath one of the bras, whatever.
Right.
Just so it's not hitting around. Money, you just fold it up, put it in there. Except for when you go to the grocery store and you have to real quick take it out and let it breathe a bit before they see you. They don't want to see you tuck in, grab it, and while you're buying a water and you have to, like, fan it out in front of them. They don't... They don't like it. It's an insult. I've been there. So don't do that.
That's funny.
So that's one thing. And then, I mean, I've done like my iPod. I've put my iPod in my bra, in my phone. iPod, bra. Okay. iPod, phone, keys, money. Usually will all somehow get stashed in my boobs.
Really?
What However, you have to watch out for sweating, because I'm talking about exercising here too.
Right.
So I'm doing it. Really, I should just get one of those like those packs that runners use, but whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
You should just do that and be fancy. But what happens is the sweat from running can seep into your phone and actually give it water damage. I've had that happen to a phone.
Really.
And same thing with your iPod.
Yeah.
And then the money.
But I mean, a phone is bulky. Where'd you put it?
Usually on the side.
Mm.
You know, because if it's right in the front. People see a big square.
Yeah.
It's like smashed up round boobs and a square. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, if I guess if this that's one of the cool things about having, I guess, a rack.
Yeah. See, you talk about smashed boobs and stuff. I don't like when women wear these like things that make their boobs look squashed, you know, because it doesn't. Yeah, because then it doesn't look good, you know. It's not.
You mean like a sports bra or?
No, not a sports bra, but some of them have like strapless dresses or something.
Yeah,
you know?
I think you're right.
And they wear that, and the boob is like totally out of shape, you know.
Yeah, it kind of smushes it down.
Shaping, yeah. So I don't like that.
No, I don't like it either.
Yeah.
I think men just like them up.
Perky.
Together. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, my ex-boyfriend, he would tell me shirts he didn't like. He's like, I don't like that shirt. But the way he likes boobs.
Uh-huh.
He's like, I don't like that shirt. You start seeing the way guys see it, too.
Yeah.
Guys are ultimately, they see it all ultimately as fertility.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And if you exactly see some smushed... cattywampus boobs, you're like, that don't look like they're functioning. I'm not into it. It's very primitive, very yeah. primal, you know?
It is, you know?
Cattywampus knockers down into... Anyway, so back to you and the weekend. Other than sleeping
back in... Back to me. You know I don't do shit on the weekend, you know?
Sam, go have
My
fun.
My life is so boring, you know? That's what you
you're
have to look forward
radio.
To when you're married, you know? Boring life.
Really, but you're about to yeah. go on a trip.
No, it's not really boring. I mean, it's just that we don't do really exciting things that single people do, although we could, right?
Yeah, you could.
I mean,
LA.
It doesn't stop me, yeah.
Those cultural norms really aren't as oppressive here. So you can go yeah. out and you could have gone to the book signing last night. Although, let's be honest, anything on Sunset Boulevard is a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
You don't want to do it. I mean, I used to do the Comedy Store a lot, and I'm just in when I was doing bringer shows, I'm like, I'm not ever doing... I mean, I'll do shows there now, but not as a right. bringer show.
Mm-hmm.
Bringer is when you basically have to bring X amount of people to perform.
Right.
Yeah, it's when you're starting off and all that stuff. And so when I would do bringer shows there, I mean, I was just like, this is highway robbery. Mm. Because it would be like $20 to park, $10 to get in, two drink minimum. And I'm like, all my friends know I'm funny. So what am I doing?
Yeah.
You know, and cut. But no, I mean, the Sunset Strip is just highway robbery. So... anytime anybody does anything on the strip, I mean, you have to get the parking, and so yeah. that wasn't. But it wasn't that bad last night. We got some cheap.
So parking. You went to the book signing of Roxana Shirazi.
I didn't go to the book signing. I went to the after party.
Right.
So it really wasn't much of an after party. It was just like hanging around, saying hi, and I was telling Sam everybody that when she came into the studio, I had like very little makeup on, if any, and it was from the day before, and then I had on like sweats. Kind of like sweats, and then I had on a baseball hat.
Yeah, a gross hat.
A really a gross hat. It was a crunched up baseball hat. I wasn't looking too hot, but come on, you know, cut a girl some slack. I can't come in here looking dolled up every day, although most of the times I do.
Right.
Let's be honest, but cut me some slack. So.
Will do.
Yeah. Okay. So she came in, and anyway, she's awesome. We totally bonded, but I think too a hat kind of shadows your face a bit.
Yeah.
So I show up to the book signing and the after party thing, and I'm like, hey, how's it going? And she looks at me. She's like, hi. Like, she did not recognize
me at all. She didn't
recognize
you. You mean she's been to so many interviews she doesn't remember anybody?
No, I didn't look the same. I said it's Kara with Sam and Kara in the morning, and she goes, oh, my gosh, you look so great. You look so different. And I was like, yeah, because I don't look homeless. I actually look like, you know, a human right now.
Yeah. So you went with your friend, right?
I went with Claire, my
roommate.
Yeah. We just went for like an hour, said hi to people. Maybe not even an hour.
Yeah. Were there a lot of people there?
There was about a dozen people, but it was the signing was already over. It was more just people hanging out.
Right.
So I think she had a pretty good turnout. I met a lot of everybody loves her, so, you know. She looked fabulous. She had a really cool hat thing on.
Oh, really?
You know, like those old-timey type hats that are like, little hats, but then they have that cloth that pulls over your face a little bit that is netting.
Yeah, yeah.
And it kind of looks film noir a bit.
Uh-huh.
I want one.
Do you?
Yeah, she had one. I was like, oh, I want that.
Yeah.
So
those are
cute.
Cool, huh?
They're so cute.
Yeah.
It's very boudoir kind of film noir look. I loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's fabulous. Everybody loves her, and I think she had a good turnout and had a good time.
Yeah.
In L.A., so.
Yeah. We're talking about the girl that wrote the book, The Last Living Slut. Iranian-born... No, born in Iran, bred backstage.
Yeah.
Bred backstage, that's what it is, yeah.
You know, what's interesting about her, you know, she was sharing just some of her interviews. Not all of them have gone as great as our interview. Mm-hmm. And then some people were kind of below the belt with it.
Right.
And kind of rude or crass.
Yeah.
I'm
willing to bet it's guys.
Well, come on. Yeah. But then also I'm not to put it on her because I think she's fabulous, but she's shockingly, if you just look at a book and you just look at the cover, I mean, they say don't judge a book by its cover, but literally if you do judge a book by its cover, mm-hmm. you're going to think this is just some party girl that's like, a star effer. You know?
Yeah.
And like all you want to do is just, she's not at all. I mean, she's so intelligent and, you know,
yeah.
very, very smart. But if I was in that position, I just wouldn't be shocked though if people had a preconceived idea of me that way.
Mm,
do you know
I
what
see.
I mean?
Yeah, yeah. But still, you know,
I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying it's just kind of realistic.
When you invite a guest to your show, you got to treat them with respect, you know, and you can't
I agree with
treat
that
them
too.
Like shit.
Yeah.
Know?
No, that's never okay. And I don't agree with, you know, people being like rude, and I'm not putting anything on her. I'm just saying, you know, part of what's so cool about her, and I think why her book is going to be so successful, is there's such a duality.
Right.
And there's kind of that shock value with, you know, coming from Iran and then having the, you know, that real sexual revolution in your life, and mm-hmm. the two parallels that are just so polar opposites.
Right.
I mean, and then you kind of go, I think that she's capitalizing off of it, and then she goes, but wait a minute, there's a lot more.
Yeah.
Which is awesome mm-hmm. and really, you know, really cool. But at the same time, people that are see what she's capitalizing off of that, you know, they're going to just assume initially.
Yeah.
Which is what's partly cool, because she goes in there, she's like, oh, and by the way, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does, you know? And I think the worst thing is when you're a guest on the show and then they spring up some questions on you that you totally didn't expect and that put you in a corner, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So you got to respect guests, I think, you know, because they are guests, you know? You're inviting them, you know? So you got to treat them with respect.
Well, I think you have some of these, we'll keep them nameless. Or should we not? I guess people that interview people that are they just want people to exploit.
Uh-huh.
It's part of their gig.
Right.
They don't really care about the person. They don't really care about the product.
They
don't care about their book. They don't care about their, you know, their creative endeavor. They just want to exploit them.
Yeah.
For their own entertainment. For their show.
Yeah, you know, I mean, and like I told you yesterday, everybody tries to be like Howard Stern, and they fall flat on their faces. You know, nobody even comes close. And the fact of the matter is Howard Stern has mellowed out in his later years. You know?
Is he? I've never really watched him.
You know, I mean, he doesn't treat people like shit for the most part. And, you know, you got to know how to treat people, you know, and when you don't treat people well in your life, you're not going to treat your guests well. And but you know what's funny is when we had the other author on at mm-hmm. the same time that she was here, and she started arguing with him, and I felt really uncomfortable.
Oh, really?
For him, you know, because he didn't expect something like that.
I actually thought the same thing too,
for great radio.
Yeah, I encouraged him. Yeah. I was like, jump in, girl, jump in. But I don't feel like she did it. I felt like she wasn't ganging up on him.
Right.
I just felt like, and I think that, you know, this is what he's doing is he's challenging people of these beliefs,
right.
these faiths,
right.
to look at the parallels and to go deeper and to really see the heart of the scriptures.
Right.
And so he's actually challenging people, and that's what he even said. He's like the $1,000 question, which I actually want to look up myself, because she said that, you know, she even told me last night, she's like, I'm going to mail him my copy of my Quran. I want him to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know what? I want to look at that too, because I think sometimes, and I haven't read this, but and this happens in Christianity too, where there'll be something about like be modest, but it's not spelled out what that is.
Mm-hmm.
So it's relative. It's up to interpretation, and it's up to what you believe God.
Right. Exactly.
On. There's an individualistic. I feel personally too, God leaves some gray area in the Bible because He wants relationship with us, where we have to grow closer to Him to know what that means for us individually. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. It's a part of a relationship. Now. I'm assuming that possibly, and I think that Roxanna would disagree with me because she said it is in the Quran, so I want to look it up. But that it sounded like what he was saying was there was no literal sentences of scripture in the Quran that said women had to cover their hair.
Right.
But that there were scriptures that talked about modesty.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's what he was debating, is that yes, there's modesty written in there, and yes, this is where the religious people took it, but this isn't what it's spelled out in the Quran.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what
I'm thinking. Yeah, you know, but the thing is, he set out to find these things, and You know, that's what he found. I guess, you know, and that's the bottom line is you have the clerics, you have the, you know, the priests. Everybody tries to interpret the Bible for you, you know. And then, you know, it's their opinions of how to read it. You might read it differently,
yeah.
You know. And so that's what happens,
mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, like the way the kosher laws enter the religion and stuff. It doesn't necessarily say don't eat milk with or dairy with meat.
Yeah, it doesn't say that.
But
it says
don't cook a lamb in its mother's milk.
Mm-hmm.
So people extrapolated from that you're not supposed to eat dairy and meat at the same time.
Do you?
I do, yeah. I do. I'm not religious, you know. But no, when I was raised, my parents are very traditional, you know.
Oh, they were? Okay.
Yeah, so we observed the holidays, not religious, but traditional.
Okay.
So we would celebrate the holidays, and my mom would keep kosher. And, I mean, most people in Israel do.
Keep kosher?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, but that's what I'm saying. I mean, it's open to interpretation, you know, and everybody looks at it differently. Mm. So... yeah, but literally it doesn't say it in there. And I think that's what he tries to say is that it doesn't say there you can't put makeup on, that you can't, you know. But then again, women didn't put makeup back in the days when it was written, you know. So, yeah, who knows? Who knows? But
yeah, I think I want to read it for myself just out of curiosity because he was really driving home that point and she was saying, but then I read it and I've grown up my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm curious to kind of compare it the two. And I thought it was really well... I didn't feel like it was too heated.
Right.
You know, I felt like
you're... Because I diffused it, you know. I mean, it could have gone on and on.
Yeah,
you know?
And I don't, but you did. But I don't think that she... I don't think she was she wasn't, like, mean-spirited about it. In fact,
no.
She said... Because I'm not... She said she's not anti-Islam or anti-Muhammad. She's not, you know, anti...
Right.
At all. She just... This is what she believes, you know.
Yeah.
And so... But what an interesting, you know, as I put myself in someone else's position... Or try to, right? I mean, even as a man, you try to go... I mean, do you ever wonder, like, if you grew up as a little girl... In Iran, right as the revolution's happening.
Mm-hmm. No, I never thought of it, actually.
No, but I mean, when somebody's telling a story, as a man, do you even wonder, like, what that would be? I mean, to be so... I mean, especially men do not want to be controlled. Men do not want to be oppressed. Nobody on earth wants to have those things happen, but specifically men, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, can you imagine being a woman and living in a part of the world that they even extract the clitoris from birth?
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. We can't understand that. You know, it's beyond our comprehension that people do that. But that's culture, you know? You have to understand that that's their culture. That's what they believe in.
Yes, because something becomes cultural,
mm-hmm.
That's fine and dandy.
Right.
But it doesn't take away what it is.
Of course not.
It's female mutilation. I mean,
right.
That's what it is. It's stealing someone's, you know,
yeah.
Sex, basically. Do you know how?
It is. It's terrible.
Yeah.
It's a terrible, terrible thing. But you know that it's actually the older women in the tribe that do that.
Well, I think that you see this in polygamy. Remember we had the lady on that talked about the polygamist mm-hmm. cult she lived in? And I think what you see is women that have been bred in this mentality, they abuse women too.
Right.
And I read a couple books dealing with some of the Islam, some personal Islam stories that I've read in the past and a couple books. And they would talk about how they would see the mothers beating the kids, and I mean, it's not everybody, but it's almost as if people that are oppressing people so hard, they mm-hmm. need an outlet, so they oppress.
Right.
And it's almost as if they would rather be the oppressor than the oppressed.
Right, but I don't think they view themselves as oppressors. You see, that's the whole
thing.
They're doing a tradition, like...
Well, smacking your kid around and hurting them is, that's an evil thing.
Right.
But... It's conditioned as well. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a conditioning that happens
right.
to people.
Yeah.
And the mutilation...
But our culture doesn't condone it. You know,
no, but also... well, that's what he said. He goes, you know, I grew up and my mom was telling me to marry a fanatical Islamic girl. And the mom was telling him this is the way it is. And a lot of people, too, this is all they know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not... I mean, I believe at the bottom of their heart they know there's something wrong in it. They just may not know how to get out of it or they don't know another way.
Mm-hmm.
Or you become... so desensitized to it that you just, you know, you just, this is the way it is, and it's you have to cope, you have to get through it, and you just accept it. I mean, a lot of people that have been through trauma, severe, severe, severe trauma, especially at childhood, develop the multiple personalities,
mm-hmm.
and it's completely a survival skill.
Right.
Because what's happening to them in that moment is so traumatic that they have to accept it as opposed to fight it.
Mm-hmm.
And so in order to accept it, they have to become someone else. And clearly that's multiple personalities, but you can take that same kind of defense and coping and survival skill, mm-hmm. and apply it to cultures that have such severe abuse, or even in our, I'll stick to the U.S., like
right.
people that grow up in just abusive homes, that right. they pass it down generation to generation.
Mm-hmm.
It's just what they know. It's what they've become conditioned to.
Right.
But it's still abuse.
It is. Well, again, you know, it's... you've got to look at it from a certain perspective.
And what's that perspective, Sam? Enlighten
that
me.
Perspective is cultural relativism, where you have to, when you view them, you don't judge them from your perspective, but from their perspective.
Okay.
You know, and that's what I'm saying. You know, I mean, to us, it's barbaric. To them, it's something that they do. They just do. I mean, look at us with circumcision. You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, some people might think it's very barbaric mm-hmm. to do, and yet we do it, and it's acceptable and fine.
Well, I mean,
you know,
I think it's good to stretch yourself and do what you're saying and look at it, do your best to look at it as possibly as you can from different sides.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the way to do it. At the same time, it's good to be objective about it mm-hmm. as much as you can, right? Because we're
right.
coming from it from our perspective. Because just because, and I mean, even in the U.S., let's use the U.S., I mean, just because certain things are culturally acceptable doesn't make them good.
Mm-hmm.
And doesn't make them right.
Right.
And I mean, I'm not saying that everything we do here is right or good. I mean, completely. I also think about it as the intent behind it mm-hmm. makes a big, like the motive behind it. For example, you look at different cultures that what they find beautiful, and it, some of that stuff just is horrific. I told you about it, right?
Yeah.
So like the plates around the neck, it looks like mutilation to me, but they find it beautiful.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
But then they must look at our culture and going, oh my gosh, they're going in and they're getting their body and their muscles cut open and
right.
these balls of, you know, silicone are going under their muscle. And then they ooze out fluids and then they have to wait for it to drop and heal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the weird shit that people get done in plastic surgery, other cultures can look at it and go, that is, why would they ever do that?
Right.
So
right.
I can kind of get with that.
Mm-hmm.
But again, the motive is kind of for beauty.
Mm-hmm.
And I, from my perspective and what I do, and I look at these, you know, robbing somebody of their clitoris,
mm-hmm.
to me, I don't think that that's the same context. I think that's, from what I can tell, that's more about a taking of her. It's like, we're afraid that if she has sexual feelings in this way,
right.
then, you know, it's about control. And
right.
you don't want the woman to stray.
But that's under your terms, you know?
No, but I mean, think about it.
You're absolutely right.
But
I mean,
no,
you know,
think about it even from their perspective. Forget
right.
my, but a lot of the... is Islamic cultures that
uh-huh.
are like, let's say, was it Sharia law? What is it called? Sharia law or the law? What's it called? They're still under the law. Like it's a theocracy. It's not a, you know, whatever.
Right.
So they're still legally it's, you know, the religion rules as the law. That's what I'm
right.
saying. So countries that are Islamic countries, they basically they cover the woman. And they do it all under the guise of she cannot even be visible to other men because she's mine. She's mm-hmm. my property.
Right.
And
right.
part of that dominance over her is that you take away her sexuality
mm-hmm.
because you don't want her to experience that sexuality and be led astray or
right.
some other man have it.
Right.
So it's not about, oh, this is beautiful like other cultures that I was describing. It's more about the control and oppression.
Right, yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
And, you know, which reminds me, a couple of years ago we had someone on the show from an organization called Clitoraid. And they're actually finding women that this was done to. And then there's doctors that actually reverse the process somehow, you know, make them be able to feel again down there. And so it's, you know, I mean, that's, so people are doing something about it. You know, but there's, you know, we can't get involved in other cultures. It's just not, you know. I mean, look what happens when cultures try to make us.
Yeah, but that's where we're disagreeing here. Is I don't think mm-hmm. of it as even though it is cultural, I don't think of it as a cultural thing that's part of, you know. You know, you can argue that okay, well, what's going on in all the genocides in Africa? Well, that's just cultural because it's been going on forever.
Mm-hmm.
People still need to get involved because it's awful. It's mm-hmm. it's horrific. It's it's against civil humanity and human rights. To me, you don't say, okay, well, that's cultural, so now, you know, that's their thing. And I'm not saying it's everybody's job to get involved, because we're all different and we all have different strengths and different ways we're going to help out. Like, we all need to do our part, whatever that is. But I don't really protect it under the guise of culture. You know what
right.
I mean?
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, that's what I'm saying, though. When you impose something on someone, then
they're imposing something on other people. That's the problem. They're imposing, and it's
no, you
bondage.
Want to impose your culture
no,
on their culture.
No, this
is just like those Islamic terrorists that try to impose their views
I'm
on us.
I'm an Islamic terrorist?
No. I'm saying that's what they do. They try to impose their rules on Western society.
Listen, I'm not going over
You're
there.
You're not a terrorist.
I'm not going over there doing anything to these people and telling them what to do. Mm-hmm. What I'm doing is isolating this act mm-hmm. and saying, although it's culturally accepted, you can't really say it's protected by culture, because it's not about beauty. It's not about tradition. It's about oppression and slavery. It's about slavery to women.
Not to them. It's
no,
not.
But you can. Well, guess what? To Hitler, yeah. What was it to him?
Yeah. Well, that's not the same.
No,
thing.
My point yeah. is that it's we're talking about relativism. So what a man thinks he's doing doesn't necessarily justify what he's doing.
Right.
You know. So in somebody's mind, I mean, I had this conversation with somebody the other day, and it's do not misread what I'm about to say. Hear me out. And this is actually from someone else's thinking that Hitler did exactly what he believed. So. Was he wrong? Absolutely, his acts are wrong. But inside of his own heart and his own mind, he fulfilled everything he wanted to do. He wasn't in conflict with himself. And nobody really knows that, because you're not really in the heart and mind of anyone. You don't know what they're really thinking or believing. But that inside of himself, he was completely sold out to that, you know, it's all about a career move. He wants to dominate. He wants to rule the world. And, you know, he has this hatred or whatever. And he, in his mind, looked at Jews as animals or whatever, or filth that had to be eradicated, whatever the situation was. So in his mind, I mean, he fulfilled exactly what he believed. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he said, so was Hitler wrong? Well, his actions...
Well, but even in his culture, it wasn't right to do that. You know?
It became culturally acceptable, though. Do you know what I mean? That's what I'm saying. Within his culture.
No, it did not. It did not.
In the German culture, it became uh-huh. acceptable. And maybe not everybody believed it, but it became acceptable. He eradicated millions and
right.
millions of Jewish
but
people.
But that's what I'm saying.
And people let him.
Mm-hmm.
People got on board. People were taught, you know what? They're not even human. They're like animals.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I know that that's not right. Duh. Everybody knows that's not right. But, I mean, it became culturally acceptable.
Right.
I'm just using that as saying, well, culturally, you can only use that so much.
Yeah, but then again, you know, he went and tried to kill people from other cultures.
So it's only good to kill people in your own culture.
What's that?
So it's only good to kill people in your own culture.
No. I didn't say it's okay to kill. But what I'm saying is that he was imposing death on other people. And what you're trying to do is impose your view on someone in Africa that has nothing to do with you, and you have no right to intervene.
I'm not imposing anything. I'm looking at it. I'm saying you're saying that it's culturally...
Oh, shit. Hold on a second. We got to call our guest.
Okay.
We totally forgot, man. We're getting in this heated... we're calling Dale Brown, folks, best-selling author. He wrote the book Executive Intent, and I'm excited to talk to him about this.
Hello.
Yes, good morning. Dale Brown?
Yes.
Yes, good morning. This is Sam and Kira calling you from L.A.
Hi, Dale.
How are you doing
this
morning?
Hi, Sam. Hi, Kira.
You have my dad's name.
Oh, really? Oh, good.
Yeah. Now, I see from the notes you're living right outside Lake Tahoe. Is that correct?
Yep. Yeah, I live on the north shore of Lake Tahoe.
Wow.
Is that a rough life, Dale?
what a beautiful place to work. What a great place to raise a son and hang out. It's great.
Yeah, I would imagine, you know, in order to write books, you need environments like that, I think. So, Dale, you've written 22 hit books, best-selling books. And how does it feel? I mean, you know, this is you've been writing since the 1980s.
Right.
Yeah, you must feel proud about yourself. I mean, that's quite an accomplishment there.
I really am. I mean, I thank God every day for how lucky I am to be doing this. I mean, the two things I've always wanted to do in my life is fly and write, and I've been lucky enough to make a living doing both, and it's really great, very very rewarding for me. It's and having the ability to do it over and over again,
right,
for so many years. It's just great.
Right.
That's exciting, Dale.
Yeah. And Dale used to be in the Air Force as well.
I was just about to ask, so where'd the flying thing come in? So you were an Air Force guy?
Right, yeah. I flew the B-52 bomber and the FB-111 bomber for 8 years.
Wow.
And I've got a total of about 3,000 hours of flying time in the military over 8 years.
That's amazing.
And then kept on flying after I got out of the Air Force.
So between flying and writing best-selling books, if you had to choose...
Why would you make him choose?
Well, that's a good question. I still do both. I still fly, and I still write. So,
That's
a good question. I think I'd write.
Okay.
Because, both things allow you to get yourself into sort of a little world. But it's, I like the worlds I create in writing. I think I would much rather write.
Right. And now,
boy, that's a tough question.
Get back to me on it. Get back to
me. Yeah, we didn't say it would be easy. but I can see the passion for flying. I've always had that. But only very few and the best actually go on to fly jets and...
Really?
Jet fighters and bombers and stuff.
How long ago was it that you were a pilot?
I left the Air Force in 1986, just before Flight of the Old Dog came out.
Oh, I see.
So it's been that long.
Right.
I worked on Flight of the Old Dog. It was the first novel. I worked on that while I was in the Air Force, and actually tried to get it published while I was in the Air Force, but I never got permission to do it. B-52s and the FB-111s were because we had the nuclear mission, everything about them was classified, not all top secret classified, but classified high enough where folks were afraid of what I had in the book might be considered classified. So I never got approval to publish it while I was in the Air Force.
Right.
And then I left the Air Force. I really wanted to pursue a writing career, but I thought I'd never really be able to do it except maybe for, writing for the base newspaper or local newspapers. So I decided to get out
Right.
So, and then I already had the book finished, and I was looking around for agents, and I actually met with an agent while I was still in the Air Force. I was stationed out at Pease Air Force Base in New Hampshire, so I took the train down to New York City and actually met with an agent, and he had my manuscript and he had all these yellow post-it notes stuck in it, and he. I thought this was going to be my big break. I thought, okay, I'm meeting with an agent, and we're going to go to, Tavern on the Green and have a big signing party. I'll sign the contract and, meet with the media and all this other stuff. And so I get there, and it's this little dinky office in New York City, and it was George Weezer and his wife, Olga, and they were in this little tiny office piled up to the rafters with manuscripts and books and junk everywhere. And Jake Elwell was back sort of stuck on his desk, and he's the managing partner now of the agency, so I met with George and Olga, and the whole meeting lasted about 5 minutes, and George had my manuscript and he threw it on the table in front of me and he said, "Fix it."
Yeah.
And I was devastated. I couldn't believe it. I thought, where's the contracts? Where's the parties? Where's the, where's the media? But I just said, fix it. So I took this manuscript home and I didn't look at it for about a week or so. And then I started flipping through it, looking at the notes he had. And I said, that's okay notes. Okay. He's got a point there. Okay. So after about a month or so, I finished it, finished the edits, sent it back to him. And I never heard from him.
Oh, wow.
Well, that's a good feeling.
And in the meantime, I got out of the Air Force, moved from New Hampshire back to California, and then moved 3 or 4 times around in California. And I just sort of forgot about the manuscript, and I'll just write another one. And he's probably sold it or put somebody else's name on it or something like that. And then I was a security guard, and I was cleaning carpets and things like that, trying to figure out what I'm going to do with my life. And then I get a telegram, the one and only telegram I've ever gotten in my life, I didn't even know he knew my address, I know I never gave it to him. He probably tracked me down somehow, and the telegram said, "Exciting news about your manuscript. Call me immediately." 212-260-0860. I still remember the phone number from way back then.
Wow.
So I called him back, and he had sold Flight of the Old Dog plus two other manuscripts, two unwritten manuscripts, and I was going to be published. And that's how the first book came about.
Boom, and now you're like a regular on the New York Times bestselling
right.
list.
Now, you're cranking out books almost every year, is that correct?
Right,
like
yeah.
At least one
book a year for past 23 years.
Wow, that's amazing. Now, I meant to ask you because, I mean, you write techno thrillers, and I found them to be very complex, very intricate. Do you write it all by yourself, or do you have a team that helps you with research and things like that?
Oh, no, all by myself. I used to have an assistant, mm-hmm. but really trying, unless you really know the military stuff, unless you find the perfect person that can understand, if I found a person that can just go up to and say, okay, get on the internet, tell me, research the V-22 Osprey and tell me about the engines or tell me about his capabilities or call somebody. Right. Very, very, very few people have that expertise. If they're good with computers and they're good with basic office skills, that's fine. But if I need research done where I can write and somebody else can do the research, if I found a person that could do that just on the fly, that would be terrific. But I've never found anybody who could really do that. So I end up spending more time explaining what I'm looking for when I could be doing all that stuff myself.
Yeah.
So I just do all the research myself.
Wow, that's amazing. And I think that's why the books come out so great, because you really become familiar with the subject matter. Now let's quickly cover Executive Intent, which is your latest book. And this one involves weapons in space. Can you give us a brief synopsis of the book?
Sure. Executive Intent is my depiction about what I think is going to be a potential crisis in the next 2 to 5 years, and that's the resurgence of both Russia and China. And I think both of those nations will attempt to challenge the United States' superiority in two very vital areas to the United States, and that's the world's oceans and in space.
Mm.
So I think as the United States draws down, especially drawing down its space forces, I believe Russia and China will look to capitalize on that and not necessarily go to war with the United States, which I don't do in this book, but at least challenge them where now other countries in the world will acknowledge that there's more than one superpower out there. So that's what happens in Executive Intent.
I see.
Both Russia and China have built up their military forces to the point where now they can challenge the U.S. Navy in vital hotspots around the world. Plus, they've also built up anti-satellite, anti-spacecraft weapons where now they can also threaten America's first military space station.
Wow. Yeah,
and that's where I bring in my hero Patrick McClanahan to try to convince the United States that we need to the government of the United States, the president, to try to do something about this, to challenge Russia's resurgence, and the president is just reluctant to do so.
Right.
So I bring on other characters who gently or more forcefully try to prod the president into taking action, but the president just doesn't seem to want to do it. So,
right.
So that's what happens in the book. And I look at hot spots that I believe are going to be even hotter in the next few years. Right now, areas of the world that are sort of simmering right now, but I believe could flash up in the next few years. And I look at our current capabilities and then examine what an actual U.S. space defense force might be able to do if we had deployed a system like that.
Right. Wow. So, and then I would imagine, when you write a book like this and, there's going to be experts reading this and stuff, you really have to get things correct. Otherwise, they won't take your book seriously.
Absolutely. Yeah, the readers, my readers, mostly guys, I would say, but they're also a lot of ex-military, current military guys. They aren't maybe experts, but when you talk about certain areas, maybe that they were veterans of, especially Navy guys, they're very proud of their their ships and their heritage and their training. So you have to get that stuff right. And the other aspect of that is I want to showcase new emerging technology, but I don't want to get to the point where it seems science fiction-y. I don't want to write science fiction. All the stuff that I describe in my books exist in various levels. A lot of them are still on the drawing boards or still on a computer someplace, but most of the weapons I write about actually exist. They may be deployed. They might be just in research and development, but all these systems exist. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to step too far beyond that.
Can you give us one of these weapons? I mean, I'm so not into, you know.
War.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, who's into war? Who's like, I love war? No, I'm so not up on it. So besides guns and bombs, what else are we dealing with?
Well, one of the things I've written about now in the past three books has been an aircraft that can take off from a runway and blast itself right into Earth orbit, and then come back and land on any runway in the world.
Really? Does that exist?
It doesn't use rocket fuel. It uses regular jet fuel, mm-hmm. and it takes off and then goes up to about 30,000 feet and then refuels with both oxidizer and jet fuel, and then it uses special engines to boost itself into Earth orbit.
Wow!
And this idea came from a paper that I downloaded online from the Air Force Institute of Technology, where they had an Air Force scientist who actually came up with this concept called the Black Horse Project, which his concept came up from an earlier British project. So I believe that paper was written in 1988, and so I've used that several times to depict what an actual system like that would do and the capabilities it would give the United States. And I believe that aircraft, I've been checking and no one admits it, but I believe that aircraft exists, maybe even as a small scale mock-up or we've seen some evidence of that now with the X-51 project they just launched, the X-37, which failed, but they actually got some good information from the aircraft before it crashed itself. Wow. But the X-51 was successful, and that was a Mach 6, six times the speed of sound aircraft test. So I believe that technology is out there, and I believe it'll only be a few years before we see it actually deployed. So I like taking technology like that, doing the research, finding out about stuff like that, and then writing about it as if it really exists.
Right.
Maybe there's only one or two copies of it out there, but I like writing about it and seeing how that new cutting edge technology can be applied to real world conflicts.
Do you so Dale? I mean, your books are so extreme and out there and exciting. What do you do for fun? Well, I mean, what's going to top your flying and your bang?
This is Lake Tahoe.
You know
is probably
saying?
Water skiing.
I mean, what are you doing for fun?
Well, this year, for some reason, maybe just because I'm getting older or something, I'm into volunteering. You know,
what?
I've got neighbors. I got neighbors here in town who every event or every activity, you always see the same people around doing stuff. So I thought, you know, I want to be one of those guys. And I like for the past 7 years, I volunteer as a kids soccer referee. So I've been doing that for a while. I did spring soccer this year. But since I like to fly, and there's been fewer opportunities to fly because of fuel prices and just you know busy.
Uh-huh.
I volunteered for two other organizations, and one was called Angel Flight West, where it's a bunch of volunteer pilots who fly medical patients free of charge to get medical treatment.
Yeah.
Mm.
So I do that, and I also volunteered for the Civil Air Patrol. So I'm training with them, and the Civil Air Patrol does 80% of the nation's search and rescue missions in the United States.
Wow.
So when an airplane goes down or if there's a lost ship, the Air Force will call on the Civil Air Patrol to do a search.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
So I'm training how to do that. So I do a lot of that. So I'm getting a lot more flying in, and I really enjoy doing that. And I get out there and run around with the kids, you know, trying to keep up with 12 and 16 year olds and kids soccer.
Yeah.
So you have how many kids do you have?
You said two.
I have one. I have 113 years old. Mm-hmm. And he's really into skiing. He's into Boy Scouts. So so he was into soccer for a little while, which is why I got into refereeing because the team needed a referee. Uh-huh. So I got trained in that, and then he switched from soccer to Cub Scouts and now Boy Scouts. So
that's funny.
But I still do the soccer refereeing.
Yeah, well, you're definitely an active person and in very interesting life. The book is Executive Intent by Dale Brown. Dale, thank you so much for giving us your time this morning. And
it's
congratulations on the book. I'm sure it's going to be a bestseller just like the rest of them.
Thank you very much, you guys.
Thank you very much.
Thank
Take
you,
care.
Dale.
So, great guy. You know, I mean, it's such a cool thing, you know, when you go in the bookstore and there's like a bestseller and then you get to talk to the author, you know.
It's very gratifying, huh?
Yeah. It is really cool. You know, I like that.
Yeah.
So we get fortunate sometimes with our guests. And actually, we're always fortunate with guests. We get some really great ones, you know.
Yeah, we do.
And we've got some really cool ones coming up in the coming weeks. And
it's going to be very entertaining. A lot of comics.
Yeah. You are bringing a lot of comics, aren't you?
A lot of comics.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back right after this.
You are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
He tried to tell her, and she thought it right. Hand in hand, they marched on through the night. He knew the answers she'd hoped to find. It'll just take a little time, just a little bit of time. It wasn't easy, but how could they fail? Though love can blind you just like a veil. He knew the price was worth the strain. There was so very much to gain. So much love was there to gain. And they flew so high that they lifted up the ground. They locked themselves away in the magic they had found. Every day they tried. Struggle.
City Talk Radio proliferates the internet. Two people have teamed up to save the world. It's Sam and Kara in the morning, only on LA Talk Radio.
You gotta do this every day, don't you?
Yeah, I love it. I can't help it.
You do it well, though. I like it. So, Rue McClanahan from the Golden Girls died yesterday at the age of 76.
Aw, man.
And,
76?
They're all dropping off like flies now.
76 you know? Isn't that old to be dying. It's kind of early to be dying, huh?
Yeah, it is. But, you know, that's how life goes. We're born, we live, we go through shit, and we die.
That's a good way to sum it up. No, it's not. Life is great. How old would you like to live till?
Not very old. You know, at the point where someone has to wipe my ass after I go to the bathroom, I don't want to be around anymore. That's just too humiliating for me. No? Why are you looking at me like that? I don't want to get to that point.
I mean,
how great is life, you know, when you just like people have to do everything for you, you know?
Life is complicated. I mean, sometimes it's not always gratifying the way we want it to be, but sometimes it has a bigger purpose that we're affecting people that we don't realize. And sometimes that's why we need the young. We need the old. We need everybody, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I'm not sure.
But I get it. I get it. I mean, it's kind of like you want to live life.
Yeah, and I want to be around for a while, obviously, you know,
yeah.
But at 50, I don't have many years left. But still, you know, I mean, it's something that you have to accept and live with, you know. And
well,
hopefully
true.
We'll just live a long time.
Or just know? Put your request in, see what happens.
Yeah.
See if it gets denied or accepted.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Maybe some prayer is in order.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, I want to live a fabulous life, full of purpose, meaning, and love,
mm-hmm.
For the Lord. And, you know, if that means till I'm 30,
mm-hmm.
or if that's till I'm 80,
mm-hmm.
you know, just as long as that's there. You know what I mean?
I suppose. I don't know. I think I know.
Like, I don't want to just kind of go through life. I want it to be
memorable.
Fact, Sarah and I always talk about like our corpses. We're like, we are going out looking like trash. We're gonna make sure this body we had, we used up every ounce of it. Like, ain't nothing gonna look good on that corpse. Like when it's in the casket and everybody's saying bye to it.
Uh-huh.
It's gonna be like mangled and just wore out because we lived life.
What a terrible thing to think about.
No, it's actually fun and kind of a cool way to look at it because you're not saving up. It's like I always talk about, like when I make a lot of money, I'm blowing it, making mm-hmm. sure every dollar is spent before I leave.
Really?
Well, I mean, not on me, but,
yeah.
you know, I want to use it in a way that's great and for people. And
yeah, to help
and,
people.
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like money is a gift, and it's not just for us to hoard and then get mm-hmm. more storehouses and get more treasures, and we all have to just, you know, hoard it. It's just things anyway.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm like, I really want to use it in a way to do good things mm-hmm. and not just for myself, but then at the end of the day, when I die, I mean, maybe leave a little for somebody that matters in my life, but mm-hmm. for the most part, give it away, and you can't take it with you.
No, you can't take
you
it
know?
With you.
And when you leave, all the work you've done and all the money you've earned, it's going to someone else anyway.
Yeah.
I'd rather see it.
That's why I think it's not important, you know, when you get older and you're about to die and stuff, the things you're going to remember is not the money and the wealth,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's the people that you connected with, you know, and that's what people are going to remember you by too, you know,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, that's why I'm saying, you know, you got to really find your priorities in life and pursue those,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think when people admire you, and a lot of people turn out for your funeral and stuff. Those are the cool things, although you don't get to enjoy it during your funeral.
I think my funeral, I want it to be a big party.
Yeah.
But like, come on, guys. You know, it's okay to cry, but I also want you guys to have a dance party afterwards.
Yeah.
Karaoke, good Mexican food. I mean, I just want it to be a killer party.
Yeah.
In fact, everybody can donate at my party. And
so you don't want them to be sad that you're gone?
Well, I think that being sad is normal. I mean, it's like trying to repress a human. I mean, there's always, anytime you have loss, you know, there's mm-hmm. going to be grief.
Right.
There's going to be mourning. And I think that's healthy. But I think you should mourn, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I want it to be done in like a way where it's, you know, everybody wear like a cool color or something. You know?
Right, right.
Because I'm going to be with God. I'm going to be in heaven, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be sad. I mean, they could be sad, which is fine. They'll get over it. But you know, the Bible says to be absent of the body is to be present with the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just, you know, I'm gonna be in the best place ever. That's like why when I watched the end of Lost, and it was basically a very spiritual.
Right. Yeah. I saw.
Did you
saw
see the
a couple,
end of it?
No, I just saw a couple pictures.
Well, they kind of.
It looked like there's a lot of light and
Light, and it kind of was like they were toiling so hard and they were working together, and then they had to all go through like this roundabout way of finding truth and finding, and then at the end, you know, he was greeted by his dad who died, and he just, there's just such a sense of peace and mm-hmm. love, and it just like he just started to break down emotionally, and it was just a sense of release mm-hmm. that, you know, and to me, the way I internalized it was like, wow, when I die and I actually get to see my maker, you know, like you get to go see God who made you in like a real intimate way. Mm-hmm. That makes me feel like, you know, nothing else matters. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that's what I think.
That's why faith is good, you know, because you believe these things, you know, and that's good. It keeps you going, you know.
Yeah, but it also kind of makes me think in a way of... you know, if I were to find out tomorrow that I had some kind of like disease or something, or who knows, you know mm-hmm. what I mean, or something fatal, it makes you want to live your life even more radically.
Right.
Like whatever that means, just full of, to me, it means full of love, full of God, full of effectiveness, purpose, mm-hmm. With, you know, and the Bible talks a lot about reckless abandonment. That's a term, it's actually not in the Bible, but I don't think it is, but it's a term a lot of Christians use. To describe a sense of being sold out to what you believe, like a reckless abandon. Mm-hmm. And in a way, I think it's so incredibly beautiful because you're going for broke. Mm-hmm. You're going for nothing in this life. I can't take any of it with me.
Yeah.
You know, you've heard the saying when you see somebody's their coffin. There's not like Louis Vuitton luggage on top. Mm-hmm. They're not taking any of it with you. And it's like going for broke. I don't mean like breaking the bank, but I mean you're gonna give everything you have in this life, mm-hmm. and emotionally, spiritually, mentally, physically, and just really pour out and give. You know. And I'm not saying I do that now. I mean I always hold back a bit. You know, we all do. But if you knew, like, you know, okay, Wednesday's your last day next week.
Right.
You know, and to be honest, I mean, we hear people say, oh, live like you're dying, and, you know, what if you're going to die tomorrow? What would you do? But if you really stop, you give it a good 10 minutes to think about, mm-hmm. or even five. Give it a good 5 minutes. So there's a good song that says, live like you're dying. It talks about living like you're dying and mm-hmm. stuff. And you never know a good thing till it's gone. Never see a crash till it's dead on. And anyway, it talks about, why is it that you don't tell the people that you love them? Mm-hmm. And all these little things. And I heard that song, and it's a great song. And it's easy to dismiss it because it's stuff we've heard before. But I actually sat and thought about it, and it really made me think about it. That's partly why I did the marathon the next day. Because yeah. I've always wanted to do one. I just haven't really trained for it and put forth that kind of effort, even though I run.
Well, eventually you'll make it.
Oh, and I will. But yeah. I was like, you know what? What if I were to go? I've always wanted to do it. It's tomorrow. It's in my town.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in my city.
Right.
I'm doing it. And I would hurt like hell. But I'm just saying, like, the things we would do.
Yeah. You got to push yourself. You
and I got to remember that, because you got to remember, especially it just awakens our spirit, I think.
Yeah.
It awakens us because we get sleepy. We get apathetic.
Yeah.
It's like, oh.
See, I wouldn't be able to run a marathon because I don't like to push myself, you know?
Well, maybe
I like
not.
Comfort.
Maybe marathon's not the thing you're supposed to do.
Yeah. No, it's not. It's not, obviously. So I'm not doing it. And, you know. But I don't know. I find this idea of heaven and hell like so childish. You know?
Yeah?
Yeah, I really do. You know, and I hope, you know, as you get older, you'll get a little wiser when it comes to that.
Well,
because,
I mean,
you know, I'll tell you what, it's like a lot of people in religion, they're always talking about the life after death mm-hmm. and things like that. And or like, you know, be prepared for the next world and keep all the rules and all that. And you know, it's like, I think life is about living now, not for the next afterlife, you know? And
but did you hear what I just said, though?
I did hear what you said.
What did I say?
I don't know. You said a lot of things.
You're right, I did. But no, I mean, I was talking about it's the part of, for me, and I think I know what you're talking
about. No, you were talking about it, like making the most out of life.
Yeah,
now.
But continue what you're saying. Anyway, go
yeah. on. But no, I mean, but you talk about, you know, constantly doing the right thing and all that, and that is all, that all has to do with, like, you know, your fate, you know, whether you're going to be go to hell or heaven.
No, not for me, it's not.
No?
No, because, see, what we believe in Christianity is, well, this is what the scriptures say, is that when you accept Jesus Christ, there's, there's a transformation that happens on the inside.
Right.
And that even though you're not perfect, eternally speaking, and this is totally outside of time restraints, but that through the blood of Christ that you are eternally washed,
mm-hmm.
and that you are now sealed with the Holy Spirit and you're going to be with God in heaven. And so you live your life for God because of a relationship, because you love him, and because just like you're in love with your wife and you know you want to do things to please her, mm-hmm. and you don't always do it right, you're not always going to be perfect, and sometimes you choose to do things that you want over pleasing her.
I see.
But you love her, right? And so it's not because she's going to disown you, but it's because you want to please her,
mm-hmm.
and so the concept is that through a real relationship with God through Christ, like a relationship, you're not doing it because you're going to get to heaven or hell. That's already been taken care of because of God's gift to us. It's not because we earned it. But because of that relationship, you want to live
that's
your
contrary
life.
To what you're saying. I mean, you,
how's it contrary?
It's contrary because you're saying that according to or religion says that your fate is determined by how you live your life.
That's not what I'm saying.
No?
No.
Okay, what are you saying?
It's saying that...
No, because you're saying it's a given. It's already given.
No, it's saying
it's
that...
It's been decided or whatever.
No, we're saying that... Okay, faith without works is dead. So there's a part of the life that you live... That
faith without what?
It says faith without works is
uh-huh,
dead.
Uh-huh.
So to say, oh, I'm saved and Jesus loves me and I'm going straight to heaven, doesn't matter what I do. Well, you have to question if that person really knows God. Because if you really are seeking God and have a relationship with God, it's going to change the way you act. It's not, doesn't mean you're going to be perfect, but it's going to change the way you think, and you're going to want to live in a relationship with God where you're pleasing him.
Mm-hmm.
But the goal is to please him and to have intimacy, not to get to heaven, because through the gift of Jesus, we believe that that's an unearnable gift and it's free to all men.
Mm-hmm.
And that when you believe on him and you receive, there is an instant gift of salvation and eternal life that you didn't earn it. You can't be good enough to get it, is basically what he's saying.
Yeah.
But it's going, I'm using the dynamic of like your children or your wife,
mm-hmm.
how you do things, not because you think they're going to leave you or necessarily disown you, but because you want to please them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you want to love them, and it's a relationship. And that's the same, I mean, it's really no different with God in a way. I mean, it's deeper, but there's really no difference. I mean, because God is person. So it's like, I mean, to be honest, so some of the things I think about sometimes is in my life when I get really busy or I get a little too focused on myself, or I kind of think about, have I been spending enough time with God as a person? Like, have we been hanging out? I know it sounds weird, but have I been trying to get to know God deeper? It's just like a human, just like a relationship. You know, you can snuff your friends, you can snub them, I mean, or you can neglect relationships, and then you're not giving it maintenance. I mean, so the life that, I mean, eternal life is something I believe is even now, because the Bible says the kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed that is planted,
mm-hmm.
And it's very tiny, then it grows into one of the biggest trees. And same thing with like the concept is tiny, 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 and it grows and grows and grows and grows and grows into something really big.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the concept of the kingdom of heaven, is that it's even here now within us,
mm-hmm.
through God. So I guess what I'm saying is, you know, I do it because I want to live a life because God's the only thing that satisfies.
Mm.
He's the only thing that satisfies.
Okay.
That's what
okay.
I believe.
Well, yeah, you're convinced and you know, you have conviction in your views, and that's a good thing. That's admirable, I think. I think. So, I was going to talk about no, I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about politics too much. But
it gets a little rough.
Yeah.
Does it wear you out?
I don't know.
Bit?
Sometimes, yeah, I just get tired of all this news and everything. You know?
Oh, so, yeah.
Yeah. Now, do you have any dates scheduled for the weekend?
I got a packed weekend. I got a packed weekend. There's stuff going on tonight. There's a couple parties tomorrow, and then Sunday's actually kind of open, but I'm sure I'll get my dance card filled. I think it's going to be a lot of girl weekend. I think I told you, like, I can't afford to go on dates if these guys are
mad. Yeah. You have told me that.
I think it's just going to... I mean, for those of you guys just tuning in, I've been on a few dates where the guys just don't want to cough up the bill. They don't want to pay. And, you know, I'm not really in the most lucrative place in my life, so... You know, I'm like, well, shit, if this is...
You know what you should put on your profile is, we'll only date you if you pay for dinner.
Oh, that's going to be... That's not going to look like a user, is it?
Well, no, not at all, but I mean,
and I honestly don't have a... I honestly, you know, I've spelled it out, but it's about wanting... I mean, there's something about being with a man that wants to take care of you that's... It's not just, oh, I want to use you. It's more of a turn-on.
Right.
It feels...
But you can't seem to find those men, so what are you going to do?
I'm just not worried about it, you know? I mean, at the end of the day, I got a life to live. I mean, and I'm not really looking to take care of me, but it's sexy when a man wants to. Yeah. It really is. You know? It really is.
All right.
When a guy's like, hey...
I don't see what's sexy about it.
Really, like, for example, okay, so I went out with this guy, mm-hmm. and... Well, this is going to be bad. This is going to be bad because we didn't go on a second date. And okay, so I met this guy. Awesome guy. He was so, we had a lot of chemistry as far as personality goes. And he's a decent looking dude.
Now, when did this happen?
This was like a week ago.
Oh, okay.
And we went out to dinner. We had a great time. He's such a gentleman. He you know, just really took charge.
Right.
It was good. It was really good. And some of the things I noticed that he did great was, like, then we went to a really cool show after dinner, and he, like, they were passing out all this free beer, and he, like, opened the beer for me and gave it to me. Just little tiny things. No, I mean, he paid for the meal. I mean, he paid for the bill.
No, I understand.
But there's these little... I mean, I guess if you're used to doing this, or this is part of who you are, you're like, you don't think about it. But right. I think it's important to notice these little things, and it feels good, you know? Especially if you've been single and there's a guy that's like, oh, I got this. Opens your beer. There's just little tiny, tiny details that are small and effortless.
Yeah.
But that can make a woman feel really special.
I suppose, yeah. I mean, yeah. If a lot of people don't do that, then I guess someone who does would stand out, you know?
And, yeah. Well, I mean, it's tiny little things. It makes you think that the person's thinking of your well-being. They're looking after you. I mean, it's not like, you know, it wasn't like anything expensive. It was just, hey, we're passing out beers at this really fun place. And I even noticed that he, you know, grabbed it. He opened mine, gave it to me. I hate beer, by the way. But it was just sweet, you know?
Yeah.
So he did everything right. And just... We had a really good time, but this is where I have to say this. I don't know if I'm totally feeling it on all the levels.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you date, is to explore and see if that person and you are a fit. But I don't want him to be spending money mm-hmm. when I'm not fully there.
Yeah.
So I just cancel the next date.
Really?
I mean, I don't know what the right answer is, because I don't want a guy to feel used either.
Yeah.
You know?
That's true. I mean, if you feel it's not going anywhere, what's
the
point? Well,
I feel like I'm having a lot of fun.
Right.
But I don't really know if it's like all cylinders firing. And I don't want the pressure of he's going out of his way to do really nice things for me, and I'm not putting out at all.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still trying to figure out if I'm attracted to him on all the levels, because it's complicated for me. And I think for women, it's different. It's deeper. And I feel like there's a time frame that, you know, not a lot of people are going to be into. And I don't even want the pressure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like second date, third date, I haven't kissed the guy yet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he's spending cash. And I don't, some guys would be, maybe there are some guys that are okay with things going that slow,
mm-hmm.
but I just don't, I don't want to, you know, like he doesn't know I'm not having sex and stuff.
Yeah.
I haven't told him.
Yeah. Yeah, not a good thing to say on the first date, for sure.
I mean, I don't mind saying on the first date, but I just.
I mean, do you? Sometimes?
If it comes up naturally. I mean, the funny thing is I thought about this on the show, is that it's quite funny that, you know, me working on being celibate, and I say working because it's not easy, to wait till I'm married or whatever, it's not my thing. It's not my motto in life. It's not my biggest anything. It's not my flag to wave. It's not my put on a resume. It's nothing awesome or self-righteous or any attribute that I've got going on that, oh, look at me. It's just strictly the fact that it's so countercultural
mm-hmm.
that it becomes other people's thing.
Right.
So I mean, I have friends that are virgins that are, you know, like you've met Sarah. she avoids conversations at all costs.
Really?
I mean, she's not on a radio show every day being grilled on it either, so she's not right. She's not having to talk about it other than when she was on our show, right? That went on for three different episodes. But, you know, she does not share that information because, and it's just, it's too weird for people to understand, and then it makes them feel weird, and then they won't talk about their life openly, and they feel judged and all this weird stuff. So she doesn't even go into it, which I respect. And then all of a sudden I see myself, you know, I'm talking about it a lot because it's so different, and we're on the radio and it gets brought up a lot because it's other people's thing.
Yeah. I don't know. I think the longer she waits and stays a virgin, the harder it'll be for her to meet anybody or actually do this because she's comfortable with it.
Well, you know? I think maybe, but think about it like this too, though, Sam. I mean, it takes sex out of the equation. Mm-hmm. People that stay single, and you know this, is, I think as men too, that stay single longer, mm-hmm. as they get older, you become much more self-assured, self-aware, and you become very self-focused and you know what you want. Mm-hmm. And so I think it becomes a lot harder for people to get married, too.
Yeah.
I mean, even if they're screwed up.
I don't know if you can know what you want if you haven't experienced everything.
Well, just talk about being with somebody. It becomes harder. You get pickier and pickier.
Yeah. I know. You do get picky.
I think you get a lot pickier. Like when you're in your 20s, you're like 21, 25. You're like, I love him. Mm-hmm. And you don't know any different. And then you get like, you know, put 20 years on that without being married. You're kind of like, I don't want this. I don't want that. I mean, I'm still in my 20s, you know, and I've even gotten to where I'm like, I don't want this. I think I've gotten even more, I used to be, I think, a lot more not as discriminative towards looks mm-hmm. because women are different. You know, I'm not as visual, but I feel like I've gotten more visual as I've gotten older.
Yeah.
Which is weird. It's not usually me.
I don't know. I just think that it's a sad commentary, I think. I think she's got major issues, obviously, you know?
Well, of course you do. You don't understand why she's doing it. You just think she's like this crazy repressed girl.
She is repressed.
Well, I mean,
I can't see how you can live without romance, you know, for so many years. Why would you want to? She's 29
or something. Well, it's not like she doesn't. Listen, it's not like she doesn't want it, but she just hasn't met anybody that really. I mean, she's met some guys she's had crushes on, but it's never developed, and she's gone on dates, but it hasn't gone anywhere. It's not like she's a hermit.
Yeah.
I mean, she goes out, she lives life.
But I can't imagine that, you know, all these years she hasn't found anyone that there's a certain connection with. I mean, it doesn't have to be perfect. She's looking for perfection, probably. That's why she can't find anything.
But I think she's really career focused too. I mean, she's very.
That's an excuse. That's a lame fucking excuse.
No,
you know?
It's not.
It is. You know, but I've never not been able to date.
You're
because
a
I was
dude
busy.
Too. Come on,
why?
You're a dude.
But what does it have to do
a
with?
Guy's
it? I hate when women say I'm too busy with
Bill
my career.
Bill Clinton was a
it's
president,
bullshit.
And he found time to get. Blowjobs. I mean, my point is
exactly.
Guys are going to fit it in no matter what. They're different. Women are different.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm not even talking about sex. I'm talking about romance, you know? And, you know, women like romance.
Listen,
and stuff,
she's just a different girl. I respect it. I respect where she is.
Right.
I know. I
mean, you're pretty similar. Just because you experimented a few times doesn't mean you're any
I've
different now.
I've had sex. I've had sexual relationships.
I know, but now you're not.
Well, as of what? I don't want to. Listen, my last
when was the last time?
My boyfriend. I broke up with my boyfriend in February.
Oh, okay.
It's worth for 4 months.
Four months, not a big deal.
It's not that big of a deal. That's what I'm saying. I'm not here sitting here all self-righteous, like I'm a virgin. It's not like that. I'm just, you know, I'm waiting. Okay, so going back to the couple dates, right? Uh-huh. The couple date scenario.
Right.
And you're not putting out at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's just there's pressure on women.
Yeah.
So the guys, it's just, I'm just like, so the guy pays, and now he's being really nice, and now he's paying a lot, and you're not sure where you stand with him, and your time frame takes longer. Mm-hmm. So I'd rather just go, you know what, let's just not go out.
Yeah.
Because I don't want the pressure of, like, that awkward, okay, well, now he's dropping me off, what do we do? And if I were to start making out with him, see, I can just get into it. I can get into it, and it may not have anything to do with him.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
I guess.
You can just get into it, be like into like making out, and you're like, oh, but this doesn't mean I'm really into you.
Yeah.
Anyway, pressure.
Pressure.
Women and the pressure. You guys don't even get it. You get ready for a date. What do you do? What do you do for a date? You shave your balls. You take a bath. You're done. You put on an outfit that's...
Shave your balls. I don't shave my balls.
You give your balls a good
especially
buzz cut.
Especially not for a date, man.
My point... What do? You take a I just like saying the word balls. You take a shower. You powder up your balls a bit. You throw on clean underwear if you wear them. You put your outfit on. You know, you make sure your teeth are brushed. Uh-huh. Done.
Right.
You know, you just have to show up. You got to try to impress her somehow.
Right. And how's the difference?
Make sure the wallet's packed with some cash. You're done. Women have to do so much, like, getting cute and grooming and prettiness. Mm-hmm. And then they go out and then they have to, you know, anyway, there's always pressure.
Yeah. A lot of pressure, huh?
There's pressure. So, yeah, I don't really know about the dating thing right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, ask me in 2 weeks because it changes.
Yeah, it does change. That's why I ask you every day, not every 2 weeks. Every day we need to find out. All right, we're going to take a short break. We're going to be talking about the World Cup soccer tournament. And I know Americans are not quite into soccer a lot, but the rest of the world is. So we're going to talk to a person that knows a lot about it. And so stay with us. We'll be back right after this.
You are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
See your sweet, sweet smile.
lines are open on Sam and Karen in the morning. Pick up your phone and jump in on the conversation. Dial 323-203-0815. That's 323-203-0815 and get in on the fun. Now, let's get back to Sam and Karen in the morning on LA Talk Radio.
A picture of donuts here.
Oh man, don't get me started on donuts.
Do you want to know 10 little known facts about donuts?
Yeah.
Donut,
they look
don't you really
know?
Good.
What
man.
Are they?
Do you like, what kind of donuts? Have you ever had Krispy Kreme before?
I have. I haven't had one. Oh damn, I'm going to want one today. I've been doing so good too. I haven't been eating junk.
Uh-huh.
So there's these donuts. I don't know what kind they are, but they're like, they're like kind of puffed and they've got powdered sugar on them and kind of, you know, puffed in with powdered sugar. And then on the inside, it's just icing, but like fluffy chocolate icing.
Mm.
I freaking want one of those bad.
So have you had Krispy Kreme before?
Yeah, like a long time ago. I mean, I don't even need to go down the donut path.
I know.
Like
but,
today, I was like, maybe I'll
But those things
sweet.
Are like amazing. You know, it melts in your mouth when you get them hot at Krispy Kreme.
Yeah.
They're amazing.
Where's
one
around here?
The closest one is in Burbank, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Good. Stay in Burbank.
I know. They closed a couple of them because I guess in L.A. people don't want to eat fattening things. So.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody here is trying to, you know, I had a drink. I had some wine last night. So when I drink, I get like I want. Well, I didn't eat dinner, so I was hungry. It was late. I should have just went to bed. But I had risotto last night right before I went to bed. So. That's not that exciting, other than
it could have been a donut.
It could have been a damn donut.
Yeah. Well, those facts are not interesting. I can't.
I wish
they'd made it as a list or something, you know?
Oh, so it's not a big deal. Well, here's you know, we know that donuts equal cellulite, so that's all we need to know.
That's all we need to know?
Yeah, but you know, have one once in a while. You gotta live life.
Yeah.
You know, you gotta definitely. So I'm with you on that one.
Yeah.
But I love food, man. I love to eat. I love a man that likes to eat too.
Do you really?
I can't be with a guy that's like, oh, I'm eating chicken breasts and egg whites all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to be with a guy who can take care of his body, you know, because I think that's sexy when somebody takes care of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But I gotta be with a man that likes to eat.
Mm-hmm.
I love to cook.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not gonna be with somebody that's.
But what's the use? You feel embarrassed eating in front of people.
No, it's just like the first couple dates.
I see.
I just gotta warm up
until you're comfortable with them.
Yeah, because food is really intimate for me. So I mean, you know, when you're like,
wow, that's amazing. Food is intimate.
It's intimate. It's a shared experience. You're really like, oh, try this, try that. And I'm a little messy eater, and I'm so into eating. So, but my ex-boyfriend, he said he loved watching me eat.
Really?
Because he said just like my face is like kind of like a kid, you know, and when I eat, I look like a kid. I'm into it. And that I just look like I'm in bliss. He's like, you look like you're in pure bliss when you eat. And I am. I'm like, I love eating.
That sounds so weird. I mean, I'd like to see you eat sometimes and see.
No, it's not that great. Really, I think it's just because he loves me. But But no, I mean, I don't know. My roommates say that too, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, when you like eating, having a good throwdown,
Yeah. Mm. I don't know. I don't eat much, you know? I mean, I eat fattening
things. No, but
you like
eating. Yesterday you were like, hey, you won like a cake or something.
Yeah.
I loved it. I love your like, gets.
Yeah, well, because I was hungry, you know?
Yeah.
But, so I eat only when I'm hungry, you know? I don't just eat like, you know, snacks and shit when I don't need to, you know? So.
No, but I like the freedom. I think that's the freedom that I like with people. They're like, oh, yeah, I'll eat that. Da-da-da-da. You know, because we live in L.A. and everybody's like, ah.
We do live in L.A.
I only eat trees with wheatgrass.
Did you ever taste that wheatgrass? I mean, is that like the worst?
I'm not planning on it.
That is, I took a sip from someone, and that is like the nastiest thing ever.
Yeah.
I don't know how people can drink that shit.
Yeah. Sarah got a smoothie and gave me a sip of it on purpose, and I almost threw up on her. It was called the Green Machine. It was like a freshly, you know.
Yeah. Hang on a second. I'm sorry to interrupt, but we have our caller on the line.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Good morning. This is Sam and Kira, and you're on the air. Who's calling?
Yeah, this is Stephen from World Football Daily.
Yes, Stephen. How you doing this morning? Thank you for calling.
Yeah, very well. And you?
Yeah, we're good. Kira, we have obviously a British guy here.
I am turned on already. So what's going on? Are we married? Are we single? When are you going to be in LA?
Steve, where are you calling?
I said I'm already turned on. Are you married? Are you single? When are you going to be in LA?
I live in LA. I am married.
Perfect. Well, that's
in LA,
not
he's
perfect.
Married. Yeah, it's not perfect.
You know they say, a rest is as good as a change.
What did he say?
What? A rest is as good as a change.
Yeah, there
you
go.
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, you know what? I like to date married men because they're not afraid of commitment, so. That's one of my favorites. You like that?
Yeah, don't believe a word she says, man.
That's so true. Yeah,
so, Stephen, you're into soccer, and as you guys call it, football in England. Tell us a little bit about the background. How did you get into this?
Oh, I've been doing it for about 8 years. It started as a show called World Soccer Weekly. It morphed into a show called World Soccer Daily. And then we shut that down last year and reestablished it as a subscription-based show called World Football Daily. As far as America's concerned, I've been doing it for about just over 8 years. We started right before the World Cup in 2002. So it's been quite a good run.
Oh, sounds good. Sounds good. So, where can we hear you? Are you on the internet? Can we listen to shows there?
Yeah, we are. You can just go to worldfootballdaily.com. It's a subscription-based show, as I said. So it's only $4.95 or $4.99 a month, and for that you get about a 90-minute or a 2-hour show every single day, Monday through Friday. Although for the World Cup, it'll be every single day, Saturday and Sunday included. And we cover the world of the football, from Europe to South America to Asia to Australia to Africa. And, of course, we'll be all over this World Cup starting next Friday.
Right. And that's next Friday in South Africa, right?
Indeed, yes.
Yeah.
I have a friend going down there. So are you already there right now?
No, I'm here in L.A. We're going to be doing the show from L.A. Because the majority of our audience is American, we always choose to experience the World Cup in the same way that our audience experiences it. So we'll be out and about at bars and pubs around L.A., watching the games, and then we'll be doing our show, and just generally for 30, 31 days, enjoying what is just a festival of football.
Right. Now, I find it interesting that you're aiming this towards the American audience, because for the most part, it's not a secret that soccer has never really caught on in this country.
Right, but like all things, you know, when we started in 2002, the landscape was completely barren. There was nothing. But now if you look, at TV in America, radio in America, the internet in America, blogs in America, there is so much football stuff in the United States. There is more football that you have access to every weekend during the European season available in the United States than almost any country on the planet, from all the different leagues or from all over the world. So, I would say, yes, you're right. It hasn't caught on the way I think people thought it would. But it's certainly growing, and it's growing and growing and growing. And it's growing from a consumer perspective. We talk about the issue of there are so many kids playing it, but that's not really what we're interested in. We're interested in the consumer, people who are paying to consume football. And that has grown by, I wouldn't put a percentage on it, but I mean, by leaps and bounds, and leaps and bounds times like 1,000.
Well, that's good. I'm really glad for you, because I know that for years they've been really trying to make it popular, but I think the main reason is because we already have a national holiday, a sport, you know, and we have both baseball and football here, American football.
Yeah.
And so maybe there's little room left for soccer.
Is that just so annoying to you, being coming to the U.S. and being like, it's this own bubble of like, we love football, we love baseball, and then you're like, hey, there's this sport that is really called football, and the whole world's kind of into it, and you're having to kind of lay the groundwork and really build. Is that kind of annoying, like just the narcissist, I guess?
It was at the beginning, and I remember when I started the business, and people said to me, "Oh, it'll never work." Well, it has worked. We've created a really nice living for ourselves over the course of 8 years, and for about 5 of those 8 years, I hosted a TV show on the Fox Soccer Channel. So this is a big enough country with a big enough population with enough immigrants and diverse and broad-minded people.
You're right. You're right.
We don't need to be the size of the NFL. we just need to keep growing, and growing we are. I've never ever seen for a soccer match how much energy there is out there about this game next Saturday between England and the United States in the World Cup. Right. It's coming. And, you know, we've always said that when ESPN starts to jam it down America's throats, that's when it will really come. And you know, the World Cup comes around every 4 years. But even if you take something like ESPN, in 2008, they showed every single game of the European Championships, which is essentially a mini World Cup, but just for Europe.
Right.
I mean, that was the first. So we keep hitting new and more advanced boundaries that if we looked at it 3 or 4 years ago, we would have said, oh, no chance, mate, no chance. Mm-hmm. But it's coming, and it gets better and better all the time.
Right.
Well, and I think it's good. I mean, you're serving the people. Like you said, the U.S. is very diverse, and there are so many, like you said, immigrants and people that they would love to have that outlet and, you know, get
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I see the need.
It's a big enough country.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you this. So for us who are not really following closely, what teams are the favorites this year to win?
I think Spain is the favorite to win. They are the ones who won the European Championships in 2008. You can never discount Brazil. You can never really discount Argentina, and the Dutch are very good this year. One of the things that it has become a problem in the last few days is some of the big players, you know, who were supposed to be going to this tournament have pulled up injured. I mean, the captain of England, Germany, Ghana, one of the main midfielders for Italy, Andrea Pirlo. And then the guy who actually is become almost the poster boy of this World Cup, a guy called Didier Drogba from the Ivory Coast, who was also named as Time Magazine's part of the list of the 100 most influential people in the world. Mm. He broke his arm today, so we're not really sure if he's going to be able to play in the World Cup. That's a bit of a problem.
But I thought you don't even use your arms, right? Like you just...
Yeah, but you're injured, you know. She
yeah,
said you don't need...
He's a big, strong guy, and you need your upper body strength as well as your feet and your legs. But so that's become a bit of a problem, but we'll see how it goes next week. And the tournament does last for a month, so maybe some of these guys will come back. But it's a blow to have some of the biggest stars go out. But at the end of the day, it really becomes that national pride for all these countries, and especially for, you know, for Africa as a continent. This is the first World Cup ever to go to Africa, and it's really exciting. It's exciting times in world football, not just in America.
Right.
I'm curious, the cultural climate that, and again, this is coming, you know, excuse the ignorance, but I know that with football, you know, globally speaking, there's just so much of a turnout. There's so much, like you said, national pride, that there sometimes are these riots and conflicts and you know, these gangs that get into fights and
right.
I know that's just part of it. It's not the focal point, but that's part of it. So I'm wondering, you know, you've got Africa, you've got the World Cup, and then you've got, I mean, it's exciting, but like, what do we? How many deaths are we looking at?
I don't think you're looking at any. I mean,
okay.
I think you're certainly not looking at any. You don't get rioting at World Cups. Okay.
Okay.
What you get is in World Cup qualifying when you start playing. You know, El Salvador and Guatemala start playing, or Honduras and Guatemala. And I'm not just singling out these nations, and it becomes very strident there. I think it's overplayed. What you will get, you'll hear these amazing, ridiculous stories of somebody, I don't know, somewhere in the middle of Nigeria who's bet all their sheep and goats on Nigeria getting to the next round, and then they won't, and they'll go and kill themselves. Or you get people who are so despondent they'll drive cars into bus stops and stuff like that. But you're not going to get rioting. That doesn't happen.
Right.
Even in countries where, for example, and this happens a lot, where you know you get you know, your country winds up going out of the World Cup because a really, really bad referee call, which is always just so annoying and just terrible. But no, not for World Cups, because essentially nobody's going to be go rioting in South Africa over two different countries. And then what happens unlike club football in these countries or in other countries, take England for example, where you can get trouble with Liverpool or Manchester United play each other. It's the one time when nobody has a club affiliation during the World Cup. Everybody is for the national cause.
Right.
Got it. So now, that's good to know.
Is there like a dominant country usually in the World Cup that does better? Because I know you mentioned Brazil and the Netherlands, and you know, I know also that Italy and Germany. I mean, these are teams that almost every year get to the finals. Is that correct?
Well, what's going to happen next Friday is called the World Cup Finals, mm-hmm. and then there is at the end of the tournament a World Cup Final. Look, the big powers of the world game are Germany, are Italy, are the Dutch, are the Argentinians, are Brazil, I suppose to a lesser extent England, and the one that's really coming on now. They've always been sort of real bottlers at the big tournaments until 2008, and now comes Spain. But yeah, those are the big powers in the world game. But you know, watch out for some of these African countries, because the brand of football they've started to play is truly, truly exciting and athletic and energetic. It doesn't require a great deal of defense, so they're always moving forward. And it's going to be scintillating. We've got six African countries in this tournament, including the host, South Africa. But look out for teams like Ghana and Nigeria and Algeria and the Ivory Coast and I can't remember which ones, I've just forgotten. But they're going to be interesting, and they've got a lot of players who play at big clubs in Europe. So what happens is, coming out of a World Cup, is you start watching these teams and these players that you don't know, and then all of a sudden you'll track them and you'll say, oh, well, he plays for Ghana, but he also plays for Chelsea in England, and that's how a groundswell of support, and that's how the game grows, because you take your support, maybe sometimes based on one player, and then you go, oh, if he plays for Chelsea in England, well, I'm going to watch Chelsea in the Premier League, and then you start opening yourself up to the entire world of club football beyond just the national stage of the World Cup.
Right, right. Well,
but it's one thing we don't really have in America, because you play for the Lakers, but there really isn't an American team in basketball except for the Olympics.
Right.
It doesn't happen in American football because so few countries play American football, and the same with baseball. But it does happen in football, and there's a big distinction between club football and international football.
I see. Okay. Well, this is fascinating, Stephen. I grew up with soccer and stuff, so I can relate to it, although for many years I wasn't into it at all. But I'm definitely going to catch this. Now you get me in the mood for soccer, you know?
Yeah,
let me plug it one more time. It's worldfootballdaily.com.
Yes.
It's only $4.99 a month. That's dollars. And if you're looking for a World Cup companion to take you through this World Cup and teach you all things about the game and the World Cup and the strategies and tactics and cultures and all that stuff, you could do worse than plonking down $5 for this month and checking out World Football Daily every day.
Sounds good. Stephen, thank you so much for all the information and
you're
the time
welcome.
You've taken.
Thank you, Stephen, so much.
Of course, and all the best to you. Take care.
Thanks, mate.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, so now you know a lot more about soccer. And
I mean, the passion. I mean, I got to tell you, I really like the passion.
It's a very passionate game for both the players and the fans. You know?
I mean, I can get down with people's passion for what they, even if I'm not into what they're doing. It's just, you know, I've heard sometimes this guy who wrote a book called Blue Like Jazz, amazing book. He said, I used to hate jazz. He goes, because it never resolved. He goes, until I stood outside and I watched this man on this theater outside of the steps playing saxophone by himself, you know, one of these street musicians. And he said his eyes were closed. He goes, I about watched for 20 minutes. He goes, after that, I love jazz.
Yeah.
He goes, because you got to watch somebody fall in love with something, or you got to watch somebody love something for you to love it sometimes.
Right, right.
And he really equates that to God. But it's kind of true for a lot of things, you know. You kind of watch somebody so passionate, and you're like, why are they so passionate?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool.
I know. I really used to be into soccer when I was a kid, you know? And
oh, really?
It's a lot of fun. It really is a lot of fun, you know?
It's not my thing, man.
Not your thing?
No.
No, because you weren't raised on it, you know?
No.
For me, it's the same thing with baseball.
I was raised on football and baseball, and I couldn't handle it. I like guys that like it.
Yeah.
So
you like guys that like sports.
I like sporty guys. I just don't want to have to like sit through.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to have to watch it with them, really.
Yeah. I've learned to like football a lot, American football.
Oh, yeah?
And I've watched that for many years. But baseball somehow never caught on for me. Even basketball. I don't know. I just can't sit back and watch a game, you know. It's not, you know. And I used to, you know, have a couple beers and with your friends and everything. That's fun, mm-hmm. you know, that's fun. It's like a party. But to sit there alone with a beer and watch a game, I don't know. But a lot of people love it, you know? A lot of people love it. Anyway, Kara, I'm all talked out for today. I still have a lot of talking to do.
You're excited, here. Though. It's Friday. Friday!
It is Friday.
Happy Friday, dear. Everybody.
Yes. And so everybody have a great weekend. You too, Kara.
Thank you.
Don't do things that you'll regret later, please.
I won't.
And we'll see you all here on Monday.
You have been listening to Sam and Kara in the Morning, which airs every weekday from 9 a.m. until 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, originating from the Los Angeles Talk Radio studios. If you have questions about the show or would like to inquire about sponsorship opportunities, please direct all correspondence to info@latalkradio.com. Sam and Kara in the Morning is a production of LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.